I'm good. Yeah, I got it. Yeah, I'm working on it. Yep. So this will be the introduction to Bava Kamma. It's not going to be a long one like the other ones. I thought about it for a while. It doesn't lend itself to introduction like the other ones do. There's not like an overarching principle or theme, really. There's not much. So I'll just say what I have to say, just basically introducing to what is called the name of Bava Kamma, the general theme of the Masechta, and then I'll just do the structure briefly. Just won't take us long. Then we can start Mishnayos today already. So the name Bava means gate, and Kamma means first. So it means the first gate. The reason why it's called that is because really originally the three first Masechtas as we have them now in Seder Nezikin, Bava Kamma, which means the first gate, Bava Metzia, the middle gate, and Bava Basra, the last gate, were one long Masechta called Nezikin. It was called Maseches Nezikin. It was 30 prakim long. And then it is broken up into pieces because it just was, I guess, unwieldy. I don't know. I can't tell you really why, but they did it. So Bava Kamma means the first part. Gate means like the thing you walk into is accessing, and also you access Torah through the gates. You see,
it's interesting because they do that in Kalim also.
Kalim also, exactly.
So
exactly.
And also divide
exactly.
Through chapter 1-3, basically.
Yeah, I don't know, section. But you'll see, it doesn't divide. It's not particularly logical where they break. That's the truth. You'll see, it breaks in the middle. You'll see, especially above Metzia, it's obvious like that. But anyways. They divide into three groups of 10, so it could be wieldy and dealt with, and that's how it goes. The Gaonim divided their books into bavas, like, you know, Chovos Levavos, they divide into bavas, gates, okay? Or Shar, as it's translated, Shar, but Shar and bavas, same thing. Nevshachim also has four Shar, yeah, he's much later. Exactly, Bava is Aramaic for Shar, exactly. Okay, so that's the name Bava Kamma, the first of the gates. It has 10 chapters in it. The main theme of the whole Masechta has got to do with damaging your responsibility, should you call it damage to others. Most of it, the first six prakim, deal with basically when my property damages your property, my obligation. So it's really property to property, if you will. Then that's the first six prakim. Oh, no, let me take a second back. So really when it comes to damage, there are like six, what are called avos. There are six avos categories of damage. I know the first Mishnah says there are four avos. Okay, but we won't get there just yet. But there, when you look at it, you'll see there are six basic categories of damage. So if you know anything about them, for years I found the first Mishnah so complicated and confusing because there's two different approaches how to read the words there between Rav and Shmuel. And Rav learns that they're all six in the first Mishnah, despite the fact that it says four, I know. But I'm saying everything like Shmuel today because that's halacha goes like Shmuel and it just becomes so confusing. And I think it'll be just counterproductive. After 10 years, I'm wise enough to know less is definitely more. So there are six categories of, as far as I'm concerned, there are six categories of damages. They are, four of them, which I mentioned in the first Mishnah, are to deal with your property. When it damages, you're liable for the full payment of what it damaged. So that means regel, that's the first of the six. Regel literally means foot or legs. When an animal walks, it treads on things. And if you walk your cow through my vegetable patch and it tramples my tomatoes, obviously you're chayav. That's regel. Regel means, that it's called an av because that's the general principle, but anything that's like same as Shabbos, or we have like in Tumah Tahara, you know, think Shabbos, there's the avos melacha, and then toldos are things that are of similar, they're not the same, but the principle is still there. So the toldos of regel are anything that the animal does in a normal way as it goes. In other words, you know, when animals walk in narrow places, they bump up against the wall. So like if an animal knocks over your wall because it bumped up against it, it's the same as if your animal tread on the tomatoes. It's the same thing. That's all regal. That's the first category. Second category is bore. Bore is a pit, a hole in the ground. That's the av, which is really two sub avos there. There's the less than 10 tefach deep and the more than 10 tefach deep bore. A tefach, remember, we'll call it now 9 centimeters, give or take. So you're talking basically a meter deep or a yard deep hole in the ground, which is significant, right? That's something like that. So that is considered, if it's got 10 tefachim in depth, then it's deep enough that if an animal falls in it, it can actually die. Okay? So in other words, less than 10 tefachim is considered not deep enough to kill. And if, you know, I make a pit that's 9 tefachim deep, whatever it is, 30 inches deep or something, and then your dog falls in and dies, it's not my fault it died. It died because it just had a heart condition before it fell in or something like that. So there's two categories. There's between 3 and 9 tefachim, or 3 and 9.9 tefachim, which is considered to be I left a damaging thing in the public place, and if you fall in and twist your ankle or your cow falls in, whatever it is, so then I'm obligated. And you fell in and it was a dark place you couldn't see or something. And then I'm obligated to pay for damages, and if it's 10 or more, then I'm obligated for paying for damages and even death of an animal. Okay. Yeah, that's that.
Below 9, it's just damages, not death.
Below 10, it's damages, but not death. That's right.
And below 3, nothing.
And good point, thank you. If it's less than 3 deep in the ground, then it's considered to be just, remember we've seen this a lot of times, 3 tefachim or less considered to be loved, but it's like part of the main ground. So if it's less than 3 tefachim, something less than a foot of an impression, then it's considered to be like, you shouldn't get hurt on it. It's the ground is normally, anyways, has those kind of perturbations. Like, what do you want? Let's say, for argument's sake, I walked in a muddy place and I left some deep footprint. That you come and twist your ankle on the footprint. Well, watch where you're going. That's the ground looks like that. What do you want from me? It's got bumps. Not my fault. I left a little impression there. But 3 tefachim, so-called a foot deep or more, is available for damage. Okay, so that's the av. So it's interesting, by the way, that this, I said the rule is this is your property damaging someone else's property. So the Torah basically says if you left a hole in the ground, but like making it yours, it's like yours. Oh, it's not your property, it's a public place. So
your mark.
A bor is the principle is anything you leave like a stumbling block in the public place. So of course that would include things not necessarily below the ground, but also above the ground. For argument's sake, if you leave some trip wire, going down.
Slow ice. If you don't clean it up on your sidewalk, that's a bor.
That's interesting. Well, okay, whatever. If you pour ice on someone's in front of in the street or something, it depends. Whatever. I don't get to anything that's complex because we have to clean it off first. But correct. If you left something in a public, you should have known better and you left it anyways. I'm saying it. Yeah. Then if someone gets hurt in it, it's like a total bore.
Would that be your fault? Leaving a screw in a parking lot.
Yeah, I think so. Exactly right. Leaving a screw in a parking lot.
Every time I get a flat tire, it's because I've got a screw.
Yeah, a bore. I'd say that's a bore. Yeah. Leaving a screw in your park in a parking lot. Exactly right. Even if you're mafka the screw, who cares? The Torah says your screw. Exactly right.
The Torah puts it back into your
shoes. Exactly. That's a good example of a tolda. The third of the category is called shame. Shame means tooth. It's referring to when they're all just words, but the concept is when an animal eats for its own benefit. It's eating because it wants to eat something like it likes eating. It wants to consume that food. So that's considered shame, and that's a separate chiyuv. So when I walk my animals by, and my animal leans down and eats your tomatoes, I'm chayav for that. That would be as opposed to if my animal, I don't want to get details, but just the idea. If my dog comes and bites your shoe and puts a hole in the shoe, that would not be shame. Even if it swallows the shoe, it's not shame. Because dogs don't eat shoes. I'm not getting into it now what it is. But it's not shame. You're the principle. Shame means animal eating for its enjoyment. If my dog goes and eats something that it shouldn't be eating, the screw that you left in your own, you left the screw in your own driveway and my dog ate your screw, I'm not chayav for shame. Because dogs don't eat screws for their enjoyment. Yeah, it's not shame.
Someone's sheep would graze in your field.
That's your classic shame. Classic shame is, like the pasuk is, I let my sheep go and graze in your field. But I'm saying anything that my animals eat your stuff, and that's normal food for eating, that's shame. It's for its benefit. The cow enjoys it. The animal enjoys it. And the fourth category is esh. Esh is a fire. So that means I light a little fire in my backyard. The wind comes and blows and spreads it to your backyard, and it burns down your house. So then I'm chayav for your house, because I should have known better that it could spread around. So that's the av. The principle is things that move when the wind blows, or things, inanimate objects that move around, basically because the wind pushes them. So it's hard to come up with toldos of esh. The Gemara has some weird ones, like, I don't know if they're weird, but uncommon. Like, for example, if you happen to leave a knife on the edge of your roof, and it could blow over when the normal wind blows, and the wind blows over the knife and falls on someone's head, so then that is considered to be esh, because you left like something ready to get blown around by the wind that could cause damage.
I'll tell you a very practical.
Yeah. If it's on the edge,
my neighbors.
Then if it wouldn't be pushed by normal wind, it wouldn't be fired.
My neighbors are doing a renovation right now, and on the rampes, they're doing this fancy thing where they're making pillars on either end of the rampes and closing it off, and they're connecting it to the pillar. So when they set that up, they have these like 8-high stacked Rishami blocks. Barely attached to anything.
Oh, and the wind blew and they flew down?
It didn't, and it's okay now. But like I was thinking, they didn't put anything down to catch it. If it did, it would kill us.
Right, so that would be if it can move. Can be moved by what's called ruach matsuya, regular winds. We're not talking about if miraculously, some weird reason, a hurricane blew into Beit Shemesh over the night. Then you would be fatar. But normal wind could blow it around. That's ka'esh. So that would be a damage of total of esh. Those are the four that the Mishnah deals with. Right. There are two other avos that aren't mentioned in the Mishnah as far as Shmuel is concerned, how I want to explain it. One is called Adam, people. What people do, and Adam is a mazik. He's called Mu'ul Olam, it's always his fault, it's always your fault.
It's called Adam?
The category is called Adam. When you cause someone damage, even if you didn't really mean to and it was an accident, you're always on the hook. Okay, but that's the way I'm defining the Mishnah, like in Shmuel's world, is the first Mishnah, which is going to be the principle for the next six parakim. Basically, Adam doesn't feature because we're told it's property damaging property. Adam is something else. I'm a person, of course, I can also damage your property. That's a different kind of damage altogether, and we're avoiding that discussion in the Mishnah here. So that's Adam. And of course, Adam can damage in lots of... There's a Brisa that talks about like many more categories of damage, because people can damage in all sorts of more abstract ways. Right? I don't have to just physically take my fist and break something of yours. I can damage you in all sorts of... I can damage your business, and I can damage your bank account, and I can damage... I can damage you in ways that don't require physical violence. Right? I can damage you in other ways. But whatever the obvious people, whatever you do to hurt someone else, you're responsible. Even if you're asleep, even if it was an accident, you got to watch where you're going. You got to be careful what you do, and you're responsible. And the last category is something sort of abstract a little bit, called Keren. Keren means horns. The case in the Chumash is it features very prominently in the Mishnayos, when an animal, a cow, gores another animal, or a person for that matter, but an animal gores an animal, that's keren. So, gore means like sticks its horns into, okay? Think running the bulls in Pamplona. So the thing is that normal cows are considered docile animals. They're not considered to be dangerous. As if you have experience with cows, you know, they're not like rabid dogs. They don't go goring you for no good reason. So it's abnormal. Now exactly, so therefore, now that means if you don't need to expect that a regular cow should go and be goring. It's not like Shane and Regal. A normal cow tramples on things as it walks. A normal cow eats things that it wants to eat. So you should know better. A normal cow does not
gore.
Are you
referring to the female cow? Because that's what a cow is.
No, I think even
you mean the bull?
Even a bull.
A bull does damage. A bull is out to kill.
What?
You just sneeze at it.
What?
It's
yeah.
Short time. It's
what? No, I think I don't think so. Except there's a Brachas that says it's not one of those wild animals. Just it's from the Mishnah. But I don't think so. I think bulls are not dangerous unless you provoke them. I don't think so. That's
look pretty scary.
What?
I suppose someone who raised
my experience with animals and my experience with Mishnah is that bulls are considered to be then. They're animals, like anything. Like, you know, like a car is not dangerous, but obviously beware. I don't think bulls go unprovoked and attack people.
Do you think they're going to rodeos?
They like, start poking them and prodding them to get them all irritated.
They squeeze something around their testicles to get them mad.
Yeah, they get them riled up. They get them riled up.
If they don't do that, then they're...
Obviously even in Pamplona, I don't think they're...
You never saw the sign of anyone who climbs over the fence is at his own risk? Because
they're animals. They're wild. I mean, I understand. They're not.
But anyone that gets in there is going to be gored by the bull.
I don't know. Someone have a real experience on a farm.
Someone was in my yeshiva in Balayn who worked on raised on farms. He said bulls have more attitude than cows, but they're not.
Yeah, I don't think. A horse. You're advised. Like, don't stand behind a horse because it can kick you and it might kick you. Like, don't irritate it. But horses don't go and attack you and kick you. My understanding, I don't know firsthand better than that. My understanding is bulls like cows. Unless they're in heat, unless they're irritated, unless you're provoking them, they just want to go about their business, eat, and that's they're not interested in sticking to the horn.
So that's the difference. There is a difference between an ox and a bull.
Maybe technically, an ox is any cow.
But that's for sure. That's the main. That's the one that's the docile ox.
An ox is if you take a cow. No, a cow means the males and the females, right? Both.
Cow means female.
But it also means female. Male. So what do you call it?
The bull is male.
The whole family is called. Whatever. Yeah, if you take a cow or a bull, that makes you feel better. And you use it as a draft animal for pulling things for labor. It's called an ox. Technical term.
Right.
Normally. Oxen are castrated. So oftentimes you'll think, right? The reason...
An ox is just a cow, then.
Not, yeah, but I think usually they use bulls, funnily enough. Usually they use the male ones. They're stronger, I guess. But usually they use the girlies for milk and the men for labor, to be actually going to pull, okay. Pull the plant. I think technically speaking... Yeah, and I agree. I think you can't, obviously. I'm not allowed in the Torah. You're right. I'm just speaking out the facts as they are. I think normally bulls are bigger. If you use them if you want to drag your wagon, you're going to get a bull to do it for you, not a cow. Anyways, but I think technically an ox is any draft animal.
So a shore is a draft animal?
No, I don't know. A shore means a cow. Means
shore
a cow.
An ox. An ox.
Yeah, but... I'm going to re-emphasize what I'm saying. There's only... I know there are other weird things, like, I'm not talking about bison and buffalo. When it comes to what you call cows, they're all the exact same species. There are lots of words. There's something called a steer, something called the ox, something called the bull, something called the cow. They're all the same animal. They're all the same biological beast. It's a cow. Okay? Depending what, if you, once they're castrated, they're called steer, and once if you use them for mating, they're called, whatever they're called. I have a name for them, I forgot now. Come to me in a second. Studs, and like they have different names. They have technical names, like, because there's a big industry. There are a lot of cows in the world, but they're all just that same beast, okay? With different names than what they're used for. Anyways, all that aside, they're apparently, as far as I understand, as far as Mishnah is concerned, these animals are not dangerous. It's not as opposed to having a pet lion, okay? You can insist all you want that the lion is docile and he's never hard and harmed a fly and he's domesticated. No. You have to be worried that your lion's going to maul somebody,
and that's that.
Yeah,
he got killed.
Yeah,
one of them.
A woman who got mauled by a chimpanzee. You know what I'm talking about? She had a face transplant. That woman. Like, there's a. Those are wild animals. I don't care if you think they're domesticated. They can go bonkers and start biting people's face off.
The owner said,
not a cow.
The chimpanzees to sip wine from a wine glass and browse the internet. Like, it was basically a person. I don't understand what happened. Like, what happened was.
It's a wild person. Yeah.
And they'll even cannibalize each other.
Yeah. So that's that. So now it comes to Karen. So Karen, the concept, this is an important point. The concept of Karen is where the animal goes and causes damage, not for its benefit, not normal, because it got up to mischief, decided to be damaging. It's not normal.
So that's what Karen is?
Yes. Karen is like
a dog biting.
No, not a dog. Dogs bite.
Is a dog a
muad? I think dogs are considered muad. You know what?
It's not one of those examples by the rock.
What about that rooster that
No, so that's Mishnah. That's Mishnah. Right. Dogs, I think not. You're right. Dogs aren't. Anyways, answer your question. If a dog goes and bites, then that's called, I'm pretty sure dog, not even, yeah, dog bites, that's called Karen. It's called Karen. If a cow gores, it's called Karen. It damaged. But it's not inevitable. Like, it's not. If I take my cow to your backyard, you can bet it's going to start eating your grass and trampling things and knocking down things. That's what cows do. If I bring my dog or my cow or my anything to your backyard, who says anything bad's going to happen? Now, it might. And if it does, I'm obligated. But it's called Karen if it damages. So when the dog bites the shoe, that was an example I was given before, that would be called Karen. The dog eats your shoe, it's called Karen. Yeah.
So if I'm walking Old Bessie through your yard and it crushes something, so that's called Rego. But if Bessie gets irritated for one reason, goes nuts and starts running around and crushes your stuff, that's called Karen?
That's right. That's exactly right. If the cow starts, I don't know if they really do in real life, but you know, it's always in the road, they start doing that with their foot, you know what I'm talking about? And when it does that, it like knocks something over, that is called the exact same foot movement that would have been for stepping, that turns into Rego. It's not walking, it's something else. It's damaging out of irritation.
Karen.
Correct. That's called Karen. So that's Karen. So Karen comes in two varieties. Most, it's called Tam and Muad. Tam means, I don't know, generic, simple, uncomplex, and Muad means like affirmed. The Tam is when it's a normal animal, before it's been confirmed to be a damaging creature. In other words, it's true, what I told you, I'm standing by that most animals are docile. But obviously, once you've got this killer bull in your hands, then it's a killer bull. So, Muad technically is when it's been confirmed to be damaging on three different occasions. Okay, well, this is introduction. We've got Mishnah, we'll deal with exact definitions and you know how to delineate these things. But the point is that a tam animal, when it damages you, only pay chetzi nezek, you pay half the damage. So if my dog goes and chews up your shoe, that's not called Shane, it's called Karen, and I pay you half the damage, not the whole damage. Because it was a little weird. the dog went loopy for a minute. Okay? Now, it's a machlokas what the svar is. It could, so there's basically two ways to look at it. Either you can look at it as the Gemara, really it's all my fault, and the Torah just gave me sort of half off, if you will, because like, of course it's my fault, well, it's fault is it, but like, I couldn't really be expected to expect my dog to chew on your shoe, why did that happen? The other way to look at it is, taka, I'm not responsible at all, like, why should I watch out for dogs chewing shoes, dogs that chew shoes, but as like a penalty to say, watch your dog, the Torah punished me half. Two ways to look at it. We'll get more to it down the way, I mean, this is the way. The point is that Karen, which is your property damaging someone else's property, is not in this Mishnah, as far as Shmuel is concerned, because it's not a full damage, it's only a half damage. You only pay half the damage, I should say. For either reason makes sense. But it's a machlokas now, how it works there. Okay, but that's that. Fine, that's it. So then that's the structure of the Masechta, is the first six prakim deal with when my property damages your property. The seventh parak deals with theft, when I take your property. It's really focused on this. Then normally when you steal something, as a thief, you pay kefil, you pay double if you get caught. Now, if I steal $100, I pay back $200. But there's some weird dinim about, the psukim talk about arba v'chamisha, if I steal your sheep or your cow, and then I go and either sell it or shecht it, so then I have to pay four if it's a sheep and five times if it's a cow. That's the Torah. So that will deal with that there in the seventh parak. Then the eighth parak deals with people hurting people. That's a different thing altogether. Me punching you out. So right? And there's a whole separate rules there, because the payments are different. It's not just that when it comes to my cow damaging your cow, you just send me the bill. I owe you for what the damage is. When I damage a person, there's other levels of damage also, exactly like you said, right? There's other payments. There's your unemployment payment, there's your medical bills, there's your embarrassment. So there's other things to do, okay? The pain you suffered. So all that has to be compensated for. That's that. And then the ninth and tenth parakim go on to talking about robbery. Gazela. It's really focused mostly on when the gazlan can keep what he took. Because once, if I steal something of yours, whatever. If I steal something of yours and I use it and I turn it to something else, I stole your paint and I made a painting out of it. You don't own the painting that I made, you just own the paint. So I have to reimburse you for the paint and not the painting. That's the gist of the ninth parak. And the tenth parak, more of the halachas of Gazela. Okay, so we'll get there. We'll get there.
So, what's the second category of Nezer? Is Regel, then what?
Regel, then Bor, Shane, and Aish. The first Mishnah we're going to deal with right now, we'll discuss those. So, okay, here you go.
And Adam is any damage.